Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Thursday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. Now, it is the lineup that a view from the terrace will not let you see. It is me, Joel Skid. It is him, Craig Fowler. And it is Hello. He, Robert Bothwick.
Hello, it is the three bad jambos. That's it, that's us. You'll never see us on TV.
Because, Yeah, you can't have that. You can't have that on telly. You can't have three Hearts fans together. Because you've never had, you know, three Rangers fans together or three Celtic fans together. But three Hearts fans, that would be too much.
It's like a Sky or BBC game where it's, I don't know, Rangers against Dundee United, and the two people have just got a connection. One's maybe got a slight connection to Dundee United, but they were mainly a connection to Rangers.
It's like
Billy Dodds or something.
They roll out Mark Wilson for Dundee United Celtic games.
You may as well be swinging a Celtic scarf during the game.
But yes, we are here to talk about the weekend's action. We are just recording after Hibs scraped their way through against plucky League One side Cove Rangers to get into the next round of the Scottish Cup. Kevin Nisbet remarkably scored a goal and then put his fingers in his ears to shut the 37 Hibs fans up that bothered to turn up Easter Road. But I
that'll really that'll really show them, Joe. That'll really show. Yes. That raises all criticism. The fact that he's been complete garbage for most of the season, yeah, that's proved it all. That's proved them all wrong. The fact that he scored in the 115th minute against a part-time side. Rob's disappeared, by the way.
Yes, I noticed that he was frozen and he just disappeared. So
he'll be back soon, probably.
Yes, he just said he got caught off. It reminded me a bit of, always those celebrations remind me of Danny Granger. Scored a deflected goal once, I think maybe home at Livingston, and he's ran to the Wheatfield stand and just shushed the Hearts fans. First of all, you're Danny Granger, and second of all, was a deflected goal.
Jimmy Hammer was good for that as well, quite a lot.
One of few things he was good for at, during his time at Tynecastle. But yes, well, let's move away from all things Hearts. We'll get on to Barry Mackay and the wonder of his man bun later on. Or is it a man bun? Is it curtains? Anyway, we will
last
start
night was just
with...
On Tuesday it was just a ponytail.
There's a ponytail, okay. We will start with... Well, what are we starting again with? Oh yeah, Ross County 3, Motherwell 1. I watched this game. It was the first time I've probably watched Ross County... So I've watched Ross Kent a few times this season and been impressed with them, and sometimes they've only came away a draw, or they've not won, they've played well in defeat. This is the first time we've really seen them not play all that great, yet come away with a 3-1 win while playing with a good chunk of the second half with 10 men.
Is that because they've just got the man who's so clearly the most improved player in Scottish football this season in Regan Charles Cook, who apparently can just win games by himself now?
Yes, and because Motherwell had nothing in the front in the final third. So it was a combination of both. But yeah, Regan Charles Cook I think it's helped, obviously, Malky Mackay coming in and playing him as in his best position, because he played quite a lot as a wing-back last season, didn't he?
Well, yeah, I think when he was, to be fair, when he was signed, he was one of the players I scouted. Remember when, prior to last season, me, you and Graham done like a kind of scouting podcast where we looked at about four or five signings each on the eve of the season. Regan Charles Cook was one of the guys I looked at. And for a lot of the clips I saw him, he kind of played as an attacking midfielder through the centre.
Mm.
And then, I'm trying to remember where County first played him. Did they not use him on the wing when he first arrived? But he couldn't run with the ball without falling over. I don't think it was necessarily that Ross County were using him in the wrong way, because they eventually started to use him at wing back, where his pace, really, and this suppose ability, after he got over those initial inability to run with the ball without falling over problems, he was quite good at kind of carrying the ball forward. So at wing back, he had a kind of role to play, especially since he worked so hard for the team, but he still didn't look, you know, any good as a footballer. And then this season, he's thrust in a role where his demands on his football ability have gone up a notch. And that's with that extra responsibility that he's been given, apparently, has now made him a much better footballer. Who knew that was a thing? That's what we should do with everybody. Andy Halliday should go up front for Hearts. There you go.
My pal was... I'm actually not going to move on to Hearts. I'm not going to move on to Hearts. So, yeah, you see, it was interesting with the first goal. So Jordan Roberts gave the ball away, and because Stephen O'Donnell had made a run up the right-hand side and Roberts had failed to find him in the pass, but it was interesting because Regan Charles Cook didn't track him. He wasn't even in the picture to track him. I think perhaps Jordan White or Blair Spittle went across to try and... Jordan White or Ross Callan went across to track O'Donnell. And that, when the ball got shifted into the final third, it was Charles Cook. It was almost like... I don't know if he just couldn't be bothered getting back to track, or he was told to stay high and just not bother with O'Donnell's forward runs. And basically, he got the ball and he was able to make Bevis Mugabe look like the Bevis Mugabe that I think many people expected from the start of the season, not the Bevis Mugabe who has turned into a real confident and able centre-back who bizarrely has been linked with Celtic earlier in the window.
That was never going to happen.
Some things just make no sense, Joe, and we just need to deal with that. I think I would like to think that it was a conscious effort from County to leave Charles Cook up the pitch. Because, you know, if there's one thing about Ross Callaghan, you know he's full of running. He'll run for 90 minutes, he'll run like a dafty, and he's always been happy to get stuck in and do the defensive side of the game. So, you know, it's not a terrible option, because you know that, you know, like Phil was saying, this season's version of Charles Cook can run with the ball and he can put the shitters up defenders, basically. And I think that, you know, when you get him in that position, it's the same with Hungbo on the other side. When you get them in those positions, they are going to cause issues. And I think both of them have been kind of pretty key to why Ross County in recent weeks, after a very, very poor start to the season, Ross County have been able to pick up, because they're playing to their strengths and they're playing their best players in the best way that they can. You know, it's still a limited team. It's a defence that seems to chop and change most weeks. But what they've got up front is capable players and guys who can be match winners. And that's, you know, true of Hungbo, Charles Cook, not so much Jordan White, but he's certainly a focal point that they can aim for, and these guys can run off of.
Yeah, it's interesting the point they make about the defence, because that's one thing that stood out for me when I looked at before watching the game, looked at the team lines, and the back four was Volkins, Randall, is it Drysdale, the new signing, and he played alongside Yakiviti, and it was obviously the first time they've played together as a four. But Yakiviti, they didn't have much trouble. Like, Motherwell didn't create many chances. They had a lot of the ball, they dominated possession. They won the midfield battle quite easily. Bani Maguire was very good, but the defence was very, the counting defence was very well organised. It was a hard working performance. Yaka Viti was absolutely tremendous, and I think County were probably not helped in the first half because they had to make two subs. So Hungbo got injured very early on, and Dominic Samuel came on, who overall played pretty well. And Jordan Tilson had to replace Cancola, so it was a bit of a disruptive start to County, and probably didn't help with the kind of their fluidity, their rhythm. But it was weird because I wanted to watch this and kind of try and appreciate why Ross County are doing so well. But you actually probably saw a different side to them, and the being able to dig it out. I think a lot of people, then I've seen a lot of St Johnson fans after the Hearts game talk about how they would never have been able to do anything like what Ross County did with 10 men.
Our friends over at Manscaped would like to wish you a happy new year. The ball has officially dropped, but that does not mean that you have to drop the ball on your... I think you see where I'm going with this. It's time to bring sexy back in 2022 and step up your game with Manscaped's Performance Package 4.0. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped to help ring in the new year with the right tools for the job. Go to manscaped.com and use the code TERRACE for 20% off and free shipping. So let me tell you about the Performance Package 4.0. Inside, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. This electric trimmer is designed to trim hair on loose skin. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate... It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light on the promised land 2022 looks to be. It's also time to freshen up down there in the new year. The Crop Reserver is an anti-chafing deodorant and moisturiser, and you've also got the Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. The package also includes the Shed Travel Bag and anti-chasing boxer briefs, which I have to say I wear quite often, and they do the trick, especially for a man like myself who likes to do a bit of exercise, get out and do a bit of walking. You don't want those cotton briefs rubbing against you after you get a bit warm and sweaty. You want these anti-chafing boxer briefs. They are the business. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code TERRACE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the code TERRACE. Have no regrets this year with our friends at Manscaped.
Motherwell exists to improve people's lives every day, the lives of their supporters, but apparently they don't want them going on European tours next season because they'd rather just sell Tony Watt for a couple of hundred thousand and give up on all hope of that. Which I've been saying quite a lot about, you know, Hearts and John Souter. And it kind of depends how the rest of January is going to go, because if Hearts can hold on to like a 10-point advantage or whatever in third place when the window shuts, then yeah, maybe Hearts should just sell Souter to Rangers, because you'd still think there'd be enough left in that team for them to keep him. But the reason why I'm talking about this is that I've said loads, you know, don't sell Souter to Rangers despite the fact he signed a pre-contract, because there's such a carrot dangling at the end of the season for the team that finished third. And Motherwell are only 5 points behind Hearts. And we've seen it may sound fanciful because Hearts are the bigger team and Hearts have the 5-point advantage, so you just kind of naturally assume that they're going to see it out. But I mean, how many times have we seen in Scottish football over our lifetime where a team, not Hearts, not Hibs, not Aberdeen, finished third? Happens to Motherwell this season, and that's worth about £3 million in prize money alone, mm-hmm. You know, not to mention the fact that the kind of the prestige, assuming Celtic or Rangers win the cup. And that's not to mention the, you know, prestige for playing in Europe, the gate receipts, you know, the fact that you can keep on players for longer contracts and, you know, maybe sell them on. So to allow, unless Tony Watt was like, nah, I just want to go now, which doesn't really seem like something they would necessarily do, then I find it a bit weird that they actually acquiesced and allowed United to sign Watt this window. Because as it sounds like, for what you've said about this game, they're already struggling with him as it is.
Yeah, and I think that you will struggle without, you know, the top goal scorer in the Premiership, you know, and I think that, you know, Motherwell are, as are actually thankfully a lot of teams in Scotland now, very well run. You know, they don't absolutely need a transfer fee of, say, a couple of hundred thousand pounds to keep them going until the end of the season, or to balance the books or anything like that. My only assumption is that, you know, they're getting that money to spend on a replacement, be that in just wages, obviously, or a small transfer fee to bring someone else in. But it was weird, just the speed, the pace at which it happened, Tony Watt leaving, and then obviously the speed at which you saw how much that affected them. It was literally the first game after he's left, a couple of days later. They're left absolutely wanting in the forward positions. You know, Kevin Van Veen, as much as I really want to love him, he's one of those Motherwell players that I want to love because he's a bastard and all this kind of stuff. He does need someone alongside him. He needs a presence alongside him that's maybe not Jordan Roberts or Kane Woolery. He needs another centre forward up there, and with losing Tony Watt, that's absolutely just ripped that away from him.
It seemed that, I'm sure Alexander came out during the week and said he almost played down the fact that they would sign someone else. He talked to they've got Connor Shields and they've got other options. So, but it is a very good point about letting Tony Watt go and the position they're in, because you look at who they brought on Wednesday night, and it was Tuesday night, Justin Amamuzur, and I butchered that surname.
Jesus Christ, Joe. Just call him Amaloser. That's his.
I was thinking about it too much.
Is that why you added on about 13 syllables?
Oh, yes, yeah. You sound like you're a fucking Pink Panther. That's incredible. Amaloser?
And it was. It's mind watching this. I was flicking through stuff I've liked on Twitter, just videos while listening to them while watching the game today. And there was a Sky Sports kind of summary of the season so far in the kind of top six. And the focus on Motherwell was Kevin Van Veen. And then they got to the end. Oh, by the way, Tony Watt's our top goal scorer. And they painted up as if he was a key player, but it's kind of quite clear through it all that Tony Watt is the kind of difference maker in Motherwell, and it was so obvious. Yeah, so obvious at in Dingwall. But one of my criticisms of Motherwell is that they've not really had anything midfield, but then they actually dominated midfield. They as I said, Barry Maguire was very good, and it was just the final third that let them down. Jordan Roberts, what a goal. I'm going to give him a wee bit of credit in that he probably did mean that first touch, which sat up. But yeah,
he meant it because he wasn't wearing a heart stop at the time. That's how he meant it. He wasn't wearing a heart stop, so he suddenly powers as a footballer are back. Don't know what it is, but he just can't perform in heart stairs. Best of luck to him. That's a fair point on Van Veen. Yeah, he's a little too mercurial to really be a talisman over the course of a season. Good player to have in the squad, definitely. Somebody that obviously the Motherwell fans kind of really have taken to, kind of cult hero figure. But if Tony Watt not scoring, Tony Watt is usually still playing well, and Van Veen can do that as well. But it's just the fact that he doesn't have the consistency that Watt has shown throughout his time in Motherwell.
Anything more to add on Ross County or Motherwell before we move on?
No.
Cool. So we are moving on to, I think, Pittodrie. Aberdeen 1, Rangers 1. It was, would you agree, it was probably the most uncomfortable I've seen Rangers under Giovanni Van Bronckhorst?
Yeah, it's got to be. Try to think back, a couple of these earlier games, they didn't look necessarily all that impressive, but they still were, from what I can remember, still fairly comfortable in their victories. Then they kind of got to the point where it wasn't just the results were coming, it was also the fact that they were looking, and when I say the early games, I mean, because I think he looked good in Europe initially, but a couple of the first league games that he was in charge of weren't exactly vintage Rangers, but then they started to motor along a bit. It seemed like he kind of lit a fire under them. They were really playing a lot better and also getting the result at the end of the day as well. And didn't really see this one coming in terms of not just in the fact that them drawing with Aberdeen away, because that could, you know, the rivalry between the clubs, you can expect that kind of thing to happen in any given game. But just the fact of the way the game went, where it just kind of looked like Aberdeen were kind of on, like, really dangerous and maybe could consider themselves very unlucky not to actually win the game.
Yeah, I thought, looking at it, I was watching it back, I thought maybe they struggled to, kind of similar to Motherwell against Ross County, that they saw a lot of the ball, but really failed to turn that control and possession into meaningful chances on a regular basis. I'd say the same, Rangers didn't create all that much as well. But I was really impressed with Aberdeen without the ball. I thought they were really disruptive to Rangers. They really got about them. And Van Bronckhorst mentioned it after the match, how there was a lot of tackles. It was a hard game to play in, and it was the performance. For example, without the ball, it's this performance I would like my team to, as I'd like to see from my team against one of the Old Firm.
Yeah, and I think that as an Aberdeen fan, I'll always be getting annoyed at how much of a sort of catalyst Scott Brown can be when he's really, really like properly up for a game, like he was in this game. He was getting in Rangers' face. He was winding them up. He was doing everything that you want Scott Brown to do on a weekly basis. But, you know, he just brought that extra level, and you could see the guys alongside him were being dragged up to that level as well. You know, Johnny Hayes being one such example, Ojo, Ferguson, all these guys raised their bar a wee bit because he properly led by example. Not from playing terribly good football, but just by, you know, the actions that he was doing was getting the crowd on side. It was getting them annoyed. It was affecting the way that they were playing. And yeah, I think Aberdeen just generally this season have the makings of a good team that occasionally sort of pokes its head out of its shell. And you know, sometimes we see that regress a little bit again, you know, the week after. But, you know, we didn't see the absolute best of Aberdeen in this game, but we saw a very good version of Aberdeen, and a version of Aberdeen that I'm sure the fans will be saying, right, can we please now, you know, properly go on, kick on until the end of the season, not just for a few weeks. Can we go and make this count and you know, try and make a charge for the top three or four places?
It was like Aberdeen had Nelson Muntz playing in the centre of the pitch. He was just running around laughing in the face of every single Rangers player he could.
And that's class. That's absolutely class. Like that is 100% what you want to see from Scott Brown. Even if he's like his legs are gone, his back's shot to shit, you don't care. If he's laughing in someone's face and flying into a tackle, that's what you want to see.
There is I think maybe a 2-3 minute clip going around Twitter from some conspiracy theorist Rangers fan with the X-Files theme tune in the background. It's something called Kevin Clancy and Scott Brown corruption and something or other. I would recommend the watch. You could look at either way. It's a compilation video of Scott Brown's best moments from the Rangers game. And when you know Scott Brown's up for it and he's loving himself, is the fact that he was getting like a lot of scoring positions. He just looked like he was desperate to score. I could see why. So the BBC, I was looking at the, because I wanted to see the possession stats again. Aberdeen dominated the ball. And the player rating, so you can predict on BBC, and Scott Brown was something ridiculous like 8.96. I'm just thinking, that's just loads of Celtic fans just going on there and just been rating him highly. Because I thought Lewis Ferguson was by far man of the match. I was so, so impressed with him. And saw a kind of different side to his game. And Scott Brown started the game as a bit more of the deeper midfielder, dropping in between the centre-backs. But then Ferguson kind of took on that responsibility. Brown pushed up the pitch, and what really impressed me Ferguson is he was really incisive with his passing. It wasn't just sideways; he was looking to go forward. And a lot of times he was getting the ball in behind the Rangers midfield, and Ryan Hedges coming off the wing and getting the ball. And I think that got a lot of joy from that. And you can see with Ferguson, I think he's came onto a game before the winter break and kind of carried on.
I think with Lewis Ferguson, like he's kind of played at such a high level for such a long time, he almost goes unnoticed in games a lot of the time now, because it's just like, oh, that's Lewis Ferguson, that's how he performs. But I've always found that when he does move into a deeper position, and he's done it quite often in his Aberdeen career, like he's played obviously 6, 8, 10, you know, he's played all these three positions, he's played them all very well. But when he drops into a deeper position, it almost like he thrives off the added wee bit of responsibility. It's like he's been relied upon to start attacks. He's been relied upon to break up play. Two things that he can do well. And I think that, you know, when he gets into a run of consecutive good games, he'll get linked to Rangers, and then that won't happen. And then you know, he'll keep rumbling on, and that's how it goes. But he's a player that I absolutely love, and I have done, you know, since he came through at Hamilton. I think he's just, he's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, Lewis Ferguson could have made it in the team of the week, but including Scott Brown was funnier.
Did you give him Sar Man?
I actually put it forward. It's an option. But Hatate was then selected as a better choice to pop the Japanese marks who are flooding
SPFL, the SPFL market.
Yeah, market right now to really, it's a really patriotic country, aren't they? Anytime one of the lads does well abroad. I mean, we're kind of the same, I suppose. We go nuts for any time Aaron Hickey does anything decent. And Ryan Gold has obviously been bigged up as being the better than Maradona over the last couple of years. So I suppose there's that aspect of it. But the Japanese in particular do really love
it. Do you think there's a Japanese abroad Twitter account? Which is
Japanese abroad pod.
Which is just waxing lyrical over a 15-minute cameo from Yuzuki Ediguchi and going mad at the Japanese coach for not selecting him.
I hope so. I really hope so. You send me that link as well about the Scott Brown clip? I've not seen it yet.
You're missing out. I watched it about four times today.
I've still got access to the Terrace Twitter account, so I can see it. And I'd like to have a good laugh at Mean Howlers.
Yeah, it's quite incredible in the reaction from Rangers. Anytime Rangers Celtic fans complain about referees and referees been against them, massive red flags. But the issue is you're just dropping red flags right, left and centre. Before we move on to the next game, I think we should talk about certainly the opening goal. Have you ever seen, there was an advert going around where it was basically it was someone like being a superhero. And then it was basically, it was an advert against drinking or drinking too much. It was a guy who's like, you thought he was a superhero and he gets up like scaffolding.
Yeah.
And then he falls off. And that's what struck me with McGregor when he came flying out the goal. It was like, right, I'm Superman. And then, oh no, I'm drunk and I've just taken out Ryan Hedges. Somehow he got away with it and Rangers got up the pitch and score.
My favourite thing about this is the discourse and Rangers fans saying, he doesn't touch him. So, have you just not watched the replay? Like, he volleys him in the knee. It's absolutely remarkable. And then, you know, it's something that Alan McGregor's been doing that for his whole career. This isn't a sign of him ageing. He does like to rush out and kick people really, really hard sometimes. And to be fair, as you know, the ratio of getting caught and not getting caught is still very much in his favour. I can absolutely see why Aberdeen fans would be furious about it, because it's an awful decision, and obviously, you know, McGregor when the goal goes in, sort of giving it tight to the Aberdeen fans as well. So it's a wee bit of that fixture that you want to see, someone getting kicked up in the air, and then, you know, the players giving it to the fans a wee bit. But it's not. It was a terrible decision.
I'm starting to believe that Glasgow Derby fans live in a parallel universe.
I think they do. I mean, listen, man, I've lived in Glasgow for coming on 12 years now. They do. And unfortunately, I'm inside that bubble. I'm my own bubble, but I can't escape that bubble. I'm a bubble within a bubble just bouncing about.
I thought David Bates was showing up for the first goal as well. He was caught no man's land with Morelos, and then the organisation at the, like, McCrory thought Ferguson was picking Hadji up, and no one ended up picking Hadji up. But the equalising goal, just wanted to bring up one other clip, was off the Aberdeen fans racing to the fence and bamming up Rangers fans. That was a lovely bit of footage.
Well, with stuff like that, Joe, you just don't know. You don't know what you miss until it's gone. You know, with fans being away for so long, and then seeing a bunch of raging loons running at a fence at some angry Rangers fans is just it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's part of football.
Moving on to something even more beautiful, Mr. Barry McKay.
Oh, right.
Barry McKay 2, St Johnstone 0.
See if we're doing this has roughly been like 10 minutes per game so far. Just mention Barry McKay and no one else. That's all I want. Just talk about him for 10 minutes. My God, what a player, what a performance.
He was just, there was one, it was the tweet I put out yesterday just to Mackay's stats, and it was his, I clipped his pass. So basically he got it on one side of the pitch and then kind of laterally ran across the pitch, skipped past a couple of players, and then just played this ball through to Alex Cochrane. Men just being at the game and just letting out a yelp.
I was fortunate to be taken in the game with Mr. Joseph Savage, Hearts Sporting Director, and he literally just turned round and made this like, oh, noise. And I was like, yeah, I it was like, he's fucking class. Like,
mine's just more Gary Neville.
Gary Neville, Nou Camp 2012. But it was just his entire game. Like the first half for Hearts was pretty poor. I mean, it was a poor game generally for the first 5 minutes. And really, there was only kind of one guy that looked like he was going to make something happen. Ginelli was being stuffed up because St Johnstone were playing a deeper line. Gary Mackay-Stephen had a very Gary Mackay-Stephen performance. But Barry Mackay, you know, he was dropping deep. He was taking the ball off of Devlin and Haring, and just trying to make something happen. You know, the first chance of the game is all because of Barry Mackay flighting a ball into the back post for Alex Cochrane, who should have gone for a goal, but squared it to Smith, who put it over. And it was just the entire game. But the second half, man, Barry Mackay, like 17 seconds into the second half.
False nine.
The weighting of that pass into Ginelli is just... first time, and it's on the bounce as well. Like the ball's bouncing. It's just, it's ridiculous.
I love the idea of you could just play Barry Mackay as a centre forward now. And if Hearts struggle to get, I do think Hearts will get one player in, but I think they really would like two strikers in by the end of the window. Whether that happens or not, we wait to see. But I do think that of the other attackers available, Ginelli, Gary Mackay, Stephen, Woodburn, maybe Mackay is the best option as the central striker. I just love the image of him. Like, if he plays as a central forward for an entire season, he just finishes with 0 goals, 30 assists.
I was going to say, you're picking the one guy who can't score for shit as a centre.
Yes,
forward.
But lovely. Just drops deep and plays balls in behind. Perfect. And that was... I mean, on the one hand, I think if you're part of the manager's union... you would probably say Callum Davis has got to be tearing his hair out because they've defended really well in the first half. They've done exactly what you should do against a Hearts team that are playing without a forward. Because as I've said quite often on this show, that the difficulty, it's not just about the fact that you lose the goal threat from a centre forward you'd kind of naturally have from their career of playing in that position and looking for the space and having that kind of instinct. You also lose the fact that when teams sit back on you and defend deep, then you lose the ability to just give it to them in tight areas, and then they attract players to them, and then they make space that way. And Hearts really struggled with that in the first half against St Johnstone. There was nobody really to give that ball to in those tight areas and do it. And then seconds into the second half, St Johnstone shift their lineup about 5-10 yards further than they did at any point in the first half, and that was where Hearts get the goal from. It creates enough space that Ginelli can get in behind, Mackay finds the pass, and it's 1-0. And then the second goal is similar as well, but by that point, obviously, St Johnstone have to commit men forward. And this is something the Hearts have managed to get away from, and it's kind of weird that St Johnstone went with the game plan, but they just... And the reason I say, like, the manager's union, sorry, to finish off that point, was that, yes, if you're Davidson, you might be tearing your hair out, but that's your job as a manager, to make sure your team are ready for the second half and focused and aren't going to concede a goal within 30 seconds. So you surely... That's a whole manager's job. So he has to take his share of the blame for that as well. But the other point I was going to make was that Hearts have managed to get away with this in a number of games, especially at Tynecastle, where they've played without Boyce and really without a striker in general. And so against Dundee United, against Ross County, and now against St Johnstone. And every time, these teams are just allowing these balls in behind. Like in the other games as well, it was like balls in behind. Like so much space. This Hearts front three, without a recognised central striker, will thrive if you give them space. If you don't give them space, they're going to struggle. But if you give them space, they will tear you apart because they're good players. And this is what's just continued to happen. And it's incredible the Hearts have managed to get away with this as much as they had. It's a different story away for home because Hearts are just rubbish away for home. And you get games like the Motherwell game where there was space in behind, but Hearts were just too crap to string three passes together.
There's a big thing I noticed from the first half, especially, was Ginelli. He just can't play with his back to goal. I thought he made some really good runs in the first half, but he's the type of player that he'll run. He'll make run, and then that's him for a couple of minutes. He's not someone who will run and then make another run right after. And Barry McKay is someone who needs, all he wants is movement ahead of him, because all he's saying is like, he knows. So Ginelli, when he gets the ball, it reminds you of when I play with my back to goal. It was like, I can't turn with it. I just play the way I'm facing. And then he's just gets his head down. He's like concentrating on just keep the ball. And you compare him to Chifchi. He had a decent game for St Johnston, and when he got the ball fired in him, he would turn. The same with Boyce. That's what he's so good at, is that he's able to get the ball and turn almost in one movement. Ginelli's not so good at that, and so that kind of obviously limited attack. Whereas with McKay, he wants someone like Ginelli, but going ahead of him. McKay is, he can play, he travels with the ball so well because he doesn't look at it. So he's able to travel with it while looking and scanning the pitch and then playing. And I know he had troubles down in England. I know the Rafe Rovers contingent of the Terrace podcast are not fans of him, but watching him in these final, I think it was his final season with Rangers, he just created chance after chance after chance, and he's starting to do that with Hearts because there is movement ahead of him. He's got
the Motherwell contingent of the podcast was also very insistent that he was rubbish.
And just poor opinions all round. And then, but there's Liam Boyce as well. I think the more they play together, the more they'll get a great understanding. But it's, I can't remember the last time we had such a creative presence. You look at his stats, just in terms of, I know you get a bit of shit for his shot assist, Fowler, but he's like, he creates big chances. He's top five in the league for creating big chances. And he's just a really, even if Hearts are shit, like at times weren't the greatest on Tuesday, you know you're watching someone who's very, very fun.
I think you're being charitable by saying at times Hearts weren't great on Tuesday. I think it was most of the game, apart from when Barry McKay was on, wasn't on. Like when McKay was on the ball, Hearts looked great, and then every other time it was like, this isn't great. I think for the listeners that maybe didn't see the game, Hearts didn't play great, but they still looked incredibly comfortable, really, for the vast majority of the game. But the standouts, you know, Barry McKay and Cammy Devlin, you can basically say that every single week now. Craig Halkett before he came off as well.
I did like Nielsen's decision to take off Craig Halkett. I'm just taking it as purely so John Souter could stand in the perfect position so he was as far away from Section N and Section G at the same time as possible.
We'll move, before we get on to Souter and then before we get into St Johnston, I just want to talk about Gary McKay-Steven.
I think we're running out of time, but he's shit. Just move on.
No, he just, you know, he was there's something about him so frustrating. Because
those wee breaths says it all.
That was incredible. I've never heard anyone breathe like that in my life.
You know, it's like a performer. I don't know. He's like a sea lion. Like what? One day he was at Dundee United or Celtic or Aberdeen. He was like this Sea World in Orlando. Like crowds flocking in to see this like fun, exciting player. Like now he's at like, I don't know, Sea Nation in somewhere like Tallahassee. He just sits there and just he's so disinterested. He just doesn't get involved, and there's just like a sparse crowd watching him. He's not a fun player. I was expecting him to come to Tynecastle and just be a fun player. I've not seen him do one trick. I can't remember him taking on a player.
I'm just expecting our listener from Tallahassee to be like, come on, mate.
I have no idea what Tallahassee's like.
My granddad built that Sea Nation with his bare hands. It's so frustrating. I can remember one game this season where I thought that McKay-Steven had come on and played a wee bit like how I wanted him to, you know, dribbling, going past players, wee tricks.
Celtic away,
and he fucking tripped over his own feet when he was through on goal. So he still he still wasn't able to do that side of it. Like, I think the one saving grace for McKay-Steven is you can still point to the sheer numbers that he gets and say that's positive. He's got more.
He scored three goals, and I think he's been shit in every single game that he scored.
And he's got more assists and more goals than anyone else in that position for Hearts this season. So, you know, yes, he's not showing what we want him to show, but he is still effective in that way.
I said to my pal that the next move he's going to make is I can see him going to St Johnston, and that's a damning indictment of Gary McKay-Steven at the moment, because St Johnston, they are in trouble.
Yeah, we could just talk about them now. I don't think there's much more about Suter that needs to be said.
We'll move on.
Yes, Johnson, I think, yeah, I agree with what you guys said. I think Shifty gave them a little something extra up front. If he can kind of continue this and maybe get a wee bit better as well, then he will give them a chance.
It was just great seeing him back in Scottish football.
Yeah, and he will give them a chance to kind of haul themselves out of trouble. The defence, I thought, looked a wee bit better than it has done. But again, kind of the game plan worked well. But again, like I said, against the Hearts team that was missing an actual forward. But clearly even looks a bit like Jason Kidd. He doesn't quite play like him yet, but I think maybe when he gets a bit more... When they play at McDermott Park and he's going to have a bit more responsibility to move out with the ball, which is, from what I can tell, is a big part of his game. So that might work out well. They still have really nothing in the middle of the park. Cameron McPherson. I was somebody that was quite a fan of him before and thought there was something there. And while I think there is something there, he just can't put it together on a football pitch at this moment in time. And if he's going to be starting games for you, you're in trouble. As we've said at various points this season, guys like Murray Davidson and Liam Craig, Craig Bryson, I don't know that they didn't play with Murray Davidson played, but they all just look so much older now. And in the centre of the park, they're just really poor and offer nothing. Michael O'Halloran, it's great they got Michael O'Halloran, Stevie May and Nadir Chifchi in the same team, because, I mean, 8 years ago, what team that would have been?
I know, it was just, there was a pange of excitement of me going to watch it, but May was dreadful. He had a great chance in the second half, and it was just, probably just summed up St Johnston's attack this season. It was so tame. There was no confidence in it at all, his effort. And there was another one with O'Halloran, had a really great run, and he just blazed it over the bar. Who's left wing back for them? Oh, Callum Booth, yeah. Yeah, it was just... they just looked so limited. And the big thing with St Johnston is that it was an issue Hearts had when we got demoted, is we had no pace in the team. No pace, and that's something, yeah. other than O'Halloran, who very rarely uses it. He doesn't use it as much as he should. But they look so one pace at times.
I think what I can say about St Johnston is that see in recent years when teams have gone down, so you've like the famous Dundee United team, that Hibs team, Aki's, Kelly, you know, the Hart, like various Hearts teams and stuff like that, is they've been laughably bad, right? You know, you look at them and you're like, oh my God, these are absolutely awful. I think the worst thing about St Johnston is they're so forgettable. Like, they're the most forgettable team that I've seen at Tynecastle this season. I think that maybe in a few weeks' time I might be like, Christ, Nadir Chifchi played at Tynecastle. And that's about it, because I could not pinpoint any other member of that St Johnston team and tell you anything about them, because they're just breezing like a light gust towards the Championship just now. And it's quite sad. You look at what they achieved last season, you look at what that did for Scottish football, you look at what it did for St Johnstone as a club, and since then they've gone further than backwards. And it's just, you know, like you're saying, guys like Cammy McPherson, Jesus, like Michael O'Halloran, a few years ago, I still can't say his name, by the way, I've never seen his name. Michael O'Halloran, twice this season he's ran into his own player in a comical fashion, and it's basically led to a goal. Like, it's just... Ah, man, Stevie May, Chris Kane came on and at least ran about and at least like tried to scare the centre-halves a wee bit. So, you know, I'd credit to him for that. He does what he did what he does. But yeah, just forgettable, man. Like the Butterfield, Jesus Christ. What?
Forgot he played, actually.
Right, okay, this is in real time, my point being exactly proven.
Rob, you said it was sad. It would be sad. If it wasn't for the fact that a lot of St Johnston fans got very chippy and ran their mouth on social media, so I don't think it's sad. I think it's very funny.
Well, I once guest appeared on a St Johnston podcast. I thought they seemed all right, so you know, I'm gonna say the lads are all right apart from the majority of them. But no, I think it is a shame. But then also you look at the players that are in that squad who are capable of doing much better, and you think, you know, maybe it's not Callum Davidson, but if someone can come in and or if there's some sort of catalyst that can get them going a wee bit, then they definitely have a chance of staying up. Of course they do.
Is it Jeff Brown the Steve Brown owner?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Jeff's dad. They talked about the amount of cash they've got in the bank. I just love it. The last week of the January transfer window for them just to go mental and just start chucking money about left, right, and centre. Legionite style, but it's just really jam packed in a week and they still go down.
They're bidding for Alan Forrest, aren't they? You know, that's a big target.
They're in a bidding war with themselves.
I mean, Alan Forrest is all right, but really,
Nicholas Gunnarsson was that was a big warning sign for me when they were linked with Nicholas Gunnarsson, who struggled to get a game for English for a Championship Hibs. Nah, he was.
I thought he was decent. He's good against Rangers.
Right, that's enough about poor St Johnstone and super Bynoe McKay. We will move to Tannadice, where St Mirren won for the first time since, I don't know, about 2013 when they won 2-1 against Dundee United. Fowler, you watched the game, watched the highlights. It looked like St Mirren were fully deserving of their 3 points.
Yes, absolutely. So I was watching this game, and I was watching United, and I was really struck at how passive and tentative United were. Like, tentative is really the word to use, actually. Both in possession and out of possession, really getting caught on their heels a lot in the centre of the park, allowing St Mirren to pick up a number of loose balls, second balls, in possession, really not doing anything with it. There was a point 20 minutes into the game, it was a long passage of play where United had the ball for ages and they just had no clue how to try and play through St Mirren. They weren't trying anything, they only really tried stuff when they were 2-0 down, and lo and behold, they actually created some chances and scored a goal. But in the first half, not just the first half, until St Mirren were 2-0 ahead, there was just nothing like that. United did have their chances, but every single one of them to that point came from a set piece. And I was like, right, it kind of makes sense, because United have been on such a poor run of form, and you know, they look like a team that's lowered confidence and scared to make a mistake, and that just kind of happens when you're in poor form. And then I remembered, hang on, St Mirren haven't won a game in 11 attempts. Like, they should also be looking like this, and yet St Mirren, with a team that came with real determination, real belief in themselves, knocked the ball about really well, had a number of kind of really kind of slick moves, where like one or two touch passing triangles around about the box. And they were obviously a team that used the winter break to say, right, let's regroup, let's get our heads in the game, we're better than this, let's go out and show it. Whereas Dundee United did not show that same sort of belief at all.
It's, when you said about Dundee United being really tentative, I watched their game against Hibs before the winter break, and the first 45 minutes, so I was struck by just how passive they were, like how good they made Hibs look. Because I came away thinking, oh, Hibs have really got onto Maloney's style of play. But then you actually just looked at United's performance, and they were just so standoffish. And it was probably one of the second worst performance I've seen I can remember. And the first was their opening game against Aberdeen. And I thought maybe that's okay, won't judge them too much because they had a lot of players missing. But the team against St Mirren was pretty strong.
Yeah, and I should probably save some praise for Jay Henderson. He did fall out of the game a bit. He didn't really do much in the second period, but in the first half, he was just roasting Scott McMahon. I mean, Scott McMahon got booked after 7 minutes for hauling him down. That was already after Henderson had managed to get in behind him, and that's kind of part of the goal as well, is that McMahon doesn't get close enough to him. But at the same time, I suppose he wasn't expecting Henderson to just rocket it into the roof of the net from like 20-odd yards.
And it was a big thing for St Mirren, because they switch formation. I think basically went 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-2. And it was probably the most attacking on paper they've been, because you looked at the St Mirren lineup this season, they've often had two wing backs who are more naturally full backs, and then essentially had McGrath behind two strikers, or Ronan and McGrath behind Brophy. So they've had.
I still thought it was a back three.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it still looks like a back three to me.
So I'm just going on because I've watched Ajax and I just looked at the team lines on Wyscout, and Wyscout had as a back four.
I can see
how it could have been a back three.
I'm trying to think, kind of thinking about it again. No, because I don't know who would have been left midfield.
They had it as Ronan left and Jay Henderson right.
I suppose it could have been. But no, I just thought it was a three. Maybe it was just kind of flexible, a kind of hybrid. Yeah.
Rob, Greg Kilty, do you like him?
Do you fancy my pal?
You better tell me something terrible that he's done to me behind my back or something. I have always appreciated the football stylings of Mr. Greg Kilty. Obviously, for various reasons, since he burst through at Kilmarnock, he's kind of struggled for a run of games really anywhere, to be honest. But I think with this St Mirren team, he's definitely got something about him that can help them that sort of that high up the park, especially when you see guys like Jamie McGrath, who obviously, you know, he's not long for this club, and you're looking for a bit of spark, someone who can maybe run beyond, someone who can maybe provide a bit of a goal threat. Conor Ronan obviously offers that as well. I think he's all right is basically what I'm getting to. Why do you ask? What's he done?
Just I was impressed from the little I've seen. I was impressed when he set up both goals. And just speaking to a couple of folk, acquaintances that played alongside him or saw him when he was a young player for Scotland youth teams and breaking through at Kilmarnock, thought he was going on to be one of the next big things in Scotland. Obviously, injuries not helped. And it does seem, like you mentioned, needs a home where he can have a lot of games and play in a number 10 position, because I think Kilty's one of those players who it can be easily just chucked out to the wing. Get on with it.
Yeah, 100%. I think it was absolutely, for me, sort of staggering a couple of years ago when he found himself at Morton and Dunfermline and all this kind of stuff, because I remember vividly the first ever podcast I did with Scott McClymont was when Kilty was just breaking through, and I was like, he's a player. He's like, oh my God, this boy is going to be incredible. Like, he really, like, you kind of, it's easy to forget how much of an impact he made coming through in that Kilmarnock team when you had, you know, guys like Robbie Muirhead and all that doing the same. But yeah, Kilty's always been a player that I've really admired. And I think, as I say, he's found a good home with St Mirren because they're capable of playing the football that he likes playing, which is in that sort of that number 10 role. I don't think he is suited to being out wide. I think, like you say, it's easy to put him out there because, you know, he's the kind of shape and size that you would typically expect to see out wide. Maybe he can shout loud enough maybe to tell Eamon Brophy to stop shooting every single time he gets the ball. Maybe he can be good for that as well.
He's not a magician. Fowler, what was Tony Watt like when he came on, and how do you, can you see him getting United the goals that they so dearly crave? Because it's all well and good getting a striker, but you need folk to create chances for that striker.
I don't think United fans are that enamoured that he came on and played on the left side of the front three. I know he's done that in Motherwell, and I know he's done well for at times in Motherwell, but I think, as we saw a lot this season, he's probably at his best when he's, or certainly at his most dangerous when he plays through the centre. And if you're playing him on the left, you're kind of wanting him to be, yes, to retain a goal threat, but also to be a kind of creator himself. And he can do that through the centre, but that's, you're kind of putting that onus on him a little bit more if you put him out on the wing. And that means he's creating chances for Mark McNulty. And that's not going to end well. He did show a wee bit when he came on. There was a wee bit of burst of life. United, like I say, they kind of ended the game reasonably well when they finally kind of got their finger out and realised the position they were in, and he helped a little bit with that, but still, like, there's a lot of problems with that United team at the moment, and maybe playing him through the centre and making him their talisman would be a good way of trying to haul themselves out of it, as opposed to coach maybe overthinking it and keeping Mark McNulty on the park. I love how unpopular he is with United fans. This is quite funny.
He's mind he got a Scotland cap and missed an absolute sitter.
I'd rather not remember.
I do remember that. I do remember that.
Incredible. Who was against San Marino?
Yep.
Dearie me.
My word.
So he got a Scotland cap, but Martin Boyle didn't he?
Thanks for ruining that link for me, Fowler. But talking of sitters, Kevin Nisbet. Oh God,
I watched. I watched the entire game, but I just got back at the house, and I was just still filling out the form for registering for Celtic pay per view, which I was surprised to find was actually a thing. After the last season, they didn't allow anybody to do it. So, and it literally, as soon as it had gone through and I pressed play, it was. Is it Maiden? What's it? Dyson Maiden?
Dyson Maida?
Maida, that's it. Maida was celebrating scoring the opening goal for Celtic, so I still haven't seen Nisbet's miss, but I saw the rest of the game.
Well, let me fill you in. So, ball gets worked down to, I think, Caden, puts a cross in, comes to him in the back post, I don't know, 3 yards out? If I'm giving him a bit of credit, 3 yards out. All he needs to do is direct the ball towards just in front of him. He takes it at a weird angle and puts it, is it clip off the post or puts it wide. The best way I can describe is imagine putting the majority of the Terrace podcast in that position and how they would finish. Like, for example, if you put Craig Anderson at the back post and you fired a ball to him, imagine how he would finish. That's how Kevin Nisbet finished. And it was an absolute shambles.
I see Craig Telfer's keeping up with the attempts. I think it's quite harsh that you're picking out Craig Anderson for that joke.
I mean, I could pick out my second choice was going to be Craig Telfer, followed by Gary Cocker, followed by yourself.
Fair.
Joel, it was an awful miss, right? You know, let's call it what it is. It was an awful, awful miss. It hits his heel. You know, he's going to try and side foot. It hits his heel, which makes it sort of bound away the other way. But he just scored a tap-in against Cove Rangers, so Nizzy is back, baby.
He is back, yeah. It's that very harsh to pick up on him for a sitter against Celtic. I mean, I really, before we get on to talk about Celtic and the new signings, I really like Kevin Nisbet, and I think he's got a lot of stick from Hibs fans, and there's games where I've watched him, I thought, you've probably been a bit too harsh on him, because I think he does a lot of really nice work outside the box. He can link play really well. He's quite a smooth player, but against Celtic, it was so poor. But it wasn't just what he was doing with the ball, it was his reaction. There was a moment in the second half where the ball got fizzed into him in the centre circle, and he's in the middle of the park, he's meant to just bring it under control, hold on to it. He just lost it, but it was his reaction. He just put his head down and jogged. There was like no intention or motivation to get the ball back and get kind of goal side and protect it. And Celtic went on to have a dangerous attack, and it's just... It's frustrating for someone who you saw with Dunfermline and you thought, for me personally, spoken so highly of.
It really looks like someone who's not enjoying their football at this moment in time.
Yeah,
he does. Absolutely.
And, you know, that body language you're talking about, Joe, as well, like we are fresh off of that Cove Rangers game, the Scottish Cup game. Obviously he did score the winning goal and stuff like that, but you saw that again at times as well. You know, he was losing it, or his first touch wasn't coming off, and there was absolutely no sort of emotion either way. It was just sort of like, ah, well, I've not got the ball anymore. That's a shame. And then, you know, sort of toddling off, and it's quite concerning. You know, it's like, why? What has caused this genuine sort of like sadness within him that he doesn't have the desire to really chase a football or anything? It is bad because, you know, he got into that Scotland squad last year on merit. He was scoring goals. He was doing well in the top flight in Scotland. We know exactly what he can do. And for me, it's going to be very interesting to see how Sean Maloney intends to bring that out of him, because he's still potentially, you know, a player worth a good couple of million pounds to Hibs. The best way to get that out of him is to play Christian Deutsch alongside him. I think that's been proven. But is he going to play with two men up front? And I'm not too sure about that. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how Maloney sort of solves that problem.
From the early indications, and I think this game that we're talking about is the perfect example of that, it looks like Sean Maloney is wedded to the 3-4-3, because if you're going to change it, you would change it for this game, with that back three that they ended up going with.
So yeah, because
Josh Campbell is a left wing back. What the fuck was that?
Never again. It was. I'll come on to ask you about just Hibs in general. Your impression of them against Celtic, because they had more possession, but we talked about Nisbet's disastrous miss. Talk to me, talk to me about the defending for the opening Celtic goal.
Funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one word I would have used. Fowler said it, humorous. There you go.
Where was Rocky? Bashiri? where exactly was he?
Where were any of them? You played Celtic at Celtic Park in the first, 5 minutes. Keep it tight.
You've got three centre-backs. Two of the three centre-backs are within 3 centimetres of each other, and the other one's about 3 miles away.
You're picking on poor Rocky here, but I was going to say, none of them cover themselves in any glory.
Oh, absolutely not.
And I think that, speaking to the few Hibs fans that I know, if you want to clutch at straws, it's like, oh, it just shows how expansive Maloney wants to be. It's like, your defenders have gone on a fucking adventure somewhere else. Like, that's not fun.
Fun for me.
Just, it was so far away, you expect them to, I don't know, just, what did you find out on your travels, Rocky? As he chased Maeda to try and stop him scoring. Again, Matt Macey as well, I thought he went down really easy. It wasn't like a really difficult shot from Maeda, but you look at it and the build-up to the goal is what Maloney wants from his team. Wants them to play from the back. He wants to control possession, and I thought it was a mixture between brave and naive, but I think it was clear to see how much Ryan Porteous is key to Hibs at the back. You just look at they've got the desire to play from the back, but there was a couple of moments early on where they invited pressure on them, but and then they just seem too congested to play out. It's almost like their midfield was on top of their defence, and then they missed Porteous' ability to kind of bypass that, because I don't think there's anyone else in that that defence for Hibs who are so assured and so effective at just kind of bypassing the press and playing behind the opposition midfield, and that's they really need Porteous, and of course they weren't helped by Harry Clark, who's probably capable of doing that as well, being out injured.
I wouldn't say that necessarily yet about Clark until we kind of see his passing ability for, like, he can run past the press maybe, but that's a bit more of a dangerous game to play. Porteous is certainly the only one that you kind of thought Hanlon would be maybe better than this, but he's not really shown it in terms of this kind of system so far. But Porteous, his passing ability is great for a centre-half, and he is, if teams are going to press Hibs high up the park because they're passing out for the goalkeeper, he is integral. And there's been rumours about him maybe being a player to leave in the January window. If you want this Maloney experiment, I'm just using the word experiment like any manager is an experiment. If you're wanting that to work in the early days and to get a bit of momentum behind it, I would not be selling Porteous this January. Hibs overall, actually, because you did mention that. Yes, they had a lot of possession. I never thought they were going to score. So, yeah, it's good to have possession at Celtic Park. It's quite admirable to have more possession than the hosts. But I think for long periods of the second half especially, Celtic were just content for them to have it, because other than one move which led to their only corner of the game, they've really done nothing.
Listen to me, it is very hard to score there, all right? Cut them some slack. No,
you can at least look a wee bit dangerous.
Well, you can. Hibs have already scored there very recently. But, yeah, I think that, you know, I'm kind of looking at Maloney the same way as I looked at Postecoglou, in that it's not rip it up and start again, but it's someone who's coming in with a very clear philosophy and someone who's going to take a bit of time to find all the pieces that are going to fit into it. So, you know, going to Celtic Park and showing that amount of possession, you know, completing more passes than Celtic in their own backyard and stuff. Yeah, they got beat 2-0. They didn't look like scoring, but that's one thing you can say, right? Okay, we've got the capability to keep the ball more than, you know, arguably the best team in Scotland, second best team in Scotland, whatever you want to say. And then it's about finding the other ways to go on about that as well. And I think that it is going to take time for Maloney and Hibs to really get going, to get clicking. Probably another couple of signings as well to really sort of allow that to happen. But yeah, it wasn't all negative for Hibs at all on Tuesday night. And I think that, you know, you're saying like Campbell at left wing back, mental. Like, let's all be honest, forgot about Dre Wright coming in. Like, that like, I had fucking no idea where he was. And then he comes. So, you know, he's trying things. Going to Celtic Park's a bit of a free hit. And I genuinely hate when people say that, right? But it's kind of true. You know, your season's not going to be defined by a game at Celtic Park, not very often. So he went for it and tried something a bit different, and I think that's fine.
To say as well, Celtic, when the game was still in any sort of doubt, were very impressive as well.
I was going to come on to Celtic because I read folks' view, like Celtic fans' views on Twitter before, and they said they were really impressed with the first half, and I wasn't blown away by them. I thought there was moments, certainly in the first half, where they looked really, really good with and without the ball, but like over, it kind of died off after going 2-0 up and into the second half.
I think you've been about I was very impressed with the first half performance. I think there was a lot of quickness and really great movement to their play, and they looked like a team that, with the additions they'd made, had taken it up a notch. And now the fact that Rangers have dropped points and the gap's only back to four, I've been saying, like, all through the winter break, whenever I've kind of written about, you know, the suitor situation and stuff, like, Rangers, you know, very likely to win the league this season. And I kind of assumed that. I thought that Celtic were still a bit of a soft touch and would drop points more regularly. But considering this is a couple of guys making their debut in a different country, but they brought a lot to that team. And I did think first half, the way that Celtic really moved the ball about, from just the way they moved it about Hibs' attack, just kind of creating so much space, that the movement of these kind of players, I honestly thought they were excellent in the first half, and they really should have scored more than the two goals they did. And that's them, you know, just joining up with their teammates. Once the, you know, with this kind of style of play, as you were kind of alluding, Rob, to do with Maloney, they will, you know, you will expect they'll progress and get even better in the near future. And I'm already a bit scared for facing them at Tynecastle next week. So yeah, I think they're going to be a bit more of a, I mean, they'll still probably arse it up and, you know, draw it home to Dundee or some pish, but I do kind of think they're a much bigger threat to Rangers' title than I think we gave credit for prior to the restart after the winter break.
I think a lot of us are sort of subconsciously, we're kind of sleepwalking towards saying Rangers will win the title, because, you know, we've seen what Celtic have been like over the last year and a half. But, you know, you're right, look at the reality, it's only 4 points. And, you know, Rio Hatate, who came in the midfield for Celtic, I think it wasn't a perfect performance, but he showed that he could be the real deal in there as well. Daizen Maeda, I think he's incredibly fast. He'll get behind a lot of defences, and generally speaking, that'll just get him a lot of goals in Scotland as well. But yeah, Celtic are still relatively fun to watch. I was expecting for a Postecoglou team to be more fun. I thought they'd, you know, concede loads of goals and all that kind of stuff. I'm pretty sure they've got the best defensive record in the league. So I'm like, that's a shame. They're just going to score goals then. But yeah, they're quietly just sort of, they're quietly going about their business. And I think they're quite happy to be seen as the underdogs in this title race as well, because I think that Rangers might be sleepwalking as well.
Yeah, I'd have to say that Hatate looks the real deal. I really like the fact he tries to be really positive when he's passing. He can go long and short as well. It was a good debut. The one player I've not seen a lot of chat about, but I really like, and he seems like a massive shit as well, is Josip Juranovic. I think he's so good, and especially with the way that Celtic play and inverted fullbacks, you can see how much more comfortable he's playing that role than Ralston, for example. You can I think it was the build up to the penalty, and it was actually so I think Juranovic did it really well, just getting in behind like Nisbet or whoever, and Taylor as well, I think, did it really well in the build up to the penalty. He just he came into field, and usually you think for wing back, fullback's default position is out wide, stretching the game, especially for Celtic higher up the pitch. But he just came into the centre circle on the blind side in Nisbet, and then chipped the ball over the top. And I think it's Celtic look much more effective with those two in those positions than Ralston, who I think has been great, but is not as comfortable taking the ball in those positions.
Yeah, I like him.
He's good. Thank you. Moving on to the final game, Livingston 2, Dundee 0. Oh, Dundee. Before we'll finish on Bruce Anderson Fowler. So talk to us about Dundee. James McPate came out after the game and made a quite pointed remark about his senior players, and looking at the team, the senior players he would, I think, kind of going for was Liam Fontaine. He talked about the defence not heading the ball. I would say Paul McGowan and a certain Charlie Adam, who was hauled off and reportedly wasn't happy with the aftermath of the game.
Charlie Adam shouldn't really have any sort of qualms about being hauled off, even when in the first half, and I thought Dundee played quite well, and it was kind of an even contest. Both teams had their chances. Dundee looked impressive in points. There wasn't really much between it. Second half, Livingston were the much better side, and Charlie Adam, throughout his time in the park, really done nothing. So he got nothing, really no complaints about getting taken off. He was so ineffective. Also, there was one point in, must have been the first half. Was it the first half? Yeah, it was. Where Dundee got a free kick, right on the edge of the box, and it was set up for a left footer, and Luke McCowan took it. So why the hell do you have Charlie Adam on your team if you're not going to let him take free kicks for left footers? Like, that didn't make any sense to me. But anyway, I think it just comes back to the problem that, like, James McPake could say, yeah, but senior players in the team, you know, whatever. Like, and if he's talking about Liam Fontaine, like, look at the second goal. Liam Fontaine, Christy Elliott, both making an arse of themselves and making it easier for Bruce Anderson to score than really anybody should be allowing in this league. But, it's January. It's mid-January. And you have Liam Fontaine and Christy Elliott in your team. That shouldn't have been allowed at the start of the season. Like, why are they still on the team now? And even, like, and Danny Mullen. Like, Danny Mullen didn't necessarily play bad in this game because he set up probably Dundee's best two chances. And that's kind of part of his, that's why he's kind of in that role and why he continues to be in the team despite the fact he, you know, if he plays 38 games in the top flight, he probably only scored about 5 goals, is because he's the best at kind of link-up play and stuff like that. But again, that comes down to recruitment. Why is Danny Mullen a player who, in the top flight, has never really looked like somebody who can cut it on a consistent basis? In the Championship, very good player, can score a few more goals, but he's their number one forward. So, like, McPake can have a mump and moan about his experienced players not doing the business for him, but I would say his experienced players are not Premiership quality, except with the exception of Charlie Adam.
He's put a lot of his chips on the bringing in players like Cummings and Griffiths and Adam, the kind of big names, but they've really not delivered as a whole. And it's all well and good him coming out and kind of saying, digging out the senior players, but it's him that he's the one who's gone out on a limb and signed him, and you think, right, you need to get something out of them, something a lot more than jobbing around in 11th place, because you looked at that team, that squad on paper at the start, like end of August, and you thought there could feasibly be a way they could challenge for the top six, but now they, as a club, have just turned into Chuckles University as the Dundee branch.
It's a very popular branch of that university.
they're constantly squabbling over the rights, both them and United.
They've got quite an alumni going on there. The homecoming is incredible. It's packed out all the time. It's the most popular event of the year.
See when I was saying earlier on about St Johnstone having a squad capable of going on a run at some stage. Obviously, they're nowhere near it just now. I am. I'm not going to say I'm worried for Dundee. I'll never be worried for Dundee. Jesus Christ! But I think they might be they might be in a spot of bother if St Johnstone do pull the finger out. Obviously, the next 2 weeks are crucial for all clubs in Scotland, but the ones especially down towards the bottom of a table, if they need to sign someone or some people to change it up, then, you know, I'm looking at a Dundee team, I'm thinking, whoa, Nelly, that's an issue there, especially Charlie Adams storming out of Almondvale straight into Tony Macaroni and all these sorts of things.
Waiting for an Uber.
He's a way to get a bus from the hospital. Aye. It's it's not looking great for Dundee at all. Cummins is off ski, Griffiths, Sheridan, who I think, you know, should be their best striker, his Achilles is twanged up to his knee basically, so he's out for a long time. Like, it's just things go against you, but also you look at the character of the people that you're signing, and then you're like, oh, I can't believe that they've turned out to be the exact person they have always been. I can't believe this. Like, it's always going to happen.
You know what this Dundee team needs, and he's currently a free agent, although I think he's about to sign for a side, is a certain Kyle Lafferty. That's what this Dundee team needs.
Honestly, you wouldn't be surprised, would you, at this point?
It would be absolutely brilliant. Livingston, Fowler, they are another team who are on, have picked up a fair amount. And looking at the team now, because we did a podcast at the start of the season, and we were trying to work out what they needed. They just looked so unbalanced across the squad. But now you look at their, I don't know, kind of first 13 or 14, and they've got like a real, seems like got a real structure, a real identity to their team. Holt and Omiyoga are a great midfield partnership. They've got Anderson really turning into a talisman, and the defence looks pretty solid and stable.
Yeah, that's the defence is probably the bit that's maybe it surprises the most. I wasn't a fan at all of Jack Fixwater last year. I'm still not entirely sold on myself, I have to say, but I'll bow to the greater knowledge of Livingston fans who say he's been excellent this campaign. And Obalai, despite the fact that in the Championship as a centre back, he didn't look really good. And we kind of thought, no, if he's signing at Livy, he's going to have to play defensive midfield to shine. He's really only played at centre back, and he's been very good. So that's worked out perfectly for them as well. They've still got problems at left back, but Nicky Devlin continues to be good. He was good in the first half of this game. He was one of Livy's best kind of attacking threats in the first half. You mentioned Holton Omiyoga. It's quite fitting that they were described as the better tag team than the Hardy Boys. Now, I think it was just because Hardy Boys are kind of like maybe the most famous tag team in wrestling, or at least one of them. And it's quite fitting though, because the Hardy Boys were so good despite being clearly kind of so undersized, and had to kind of really kind of wow the crowd and, you know, defeat opponents, you know what I'm talking about when it comes to wrestling, but do it through their fearlessness and tenacity, because they were smaller and they weren't, you know, it had to be their kind of agility and stuff like that. And that's what kind of Holt and Omiyoga are like. They're both tiny, but they've both got a lot of heart, especially Jason Holt. Like, the guy loves to. I love that he's just basically been a hatchet man now as well. I mean, if you want to say he was maybe fortunate not to be sent off for that wild challenge on Max Anderson, he was even if you would say that itself was a booking, which I thought it probably was just about, then he was fortunate that he hadn't been booked before then, because he spent the first half fouling Dundee anyway. So I was actually surprised when he made that challenge, having watched it back, because I'd already seen the highlights. I was like, has he not been booked yet? Surely though. But yeah, he had. So they have been giving them an excellent platform.
I was curious he called the Hardy Boys the most famous tag team. I mean, the answer is the New Age Outlaws, because that makes Bruce Anderson Triple H.
Okay.
I don't think work the WWE the most... box.
Like the New Age Outlaws are the most famous introduction for a tag team. I don't think they're the best tag team or most famous.
You guys just keep going about wrestling. I'm going to go to bed, all right?
Anyway, on to Bruce Anderson. He was excellent in this game, and he was one of Livingston's best players in the first half as well, when they didn't quite have it completely their own way like they did through a lot of the second. His running off the ball, his movement, and the fact that he ran like really strong running as well, like really kind of purposeful, not just, you know, flitting about and getting lucky, making direct runs to the place of the Dundee defence that would hurt them most. And Like, even the... Yeah, he scores for the first... Both his goals were for set pieces, but the first corner comes from him kind of forcing the issue with one of those runs, you know, just charging straight into the heart of the box and then firing a shot where he's very unlucky that the Legston's managed to get a terrific save, yeah, to get a slight touch on it and put it onto the bar. But he was outstanding. I think we're right in saying Tony had said in the chat that they put a forward on beside him, because that didn't happen. He was up front by himself on target.
Yeah, because Tony went to the new boy Chuck.
Yeah, he came on after it was already 2-0, and he played left wing.
No, Joel, I'm not letting you get away with that. Say his full name.
I'm not sure. I need to look up what. Get me. I'll finish on his full name because I need to look up.
I know what it is because I purposely found a YouTube video that said the pronunciation, so I can say it. But I'm gonna wait for Joel to say it. He did look decent when he came on, because he had a, like I said when Tony and I done the podcast on Monday, that he does have a very nice touch and he's got quickness and good technique and stuff like that. And it's just whether or not he knows how to use it. But he did have a couple of really kind of promising runs after he come off the bench as well. So he might just... David Martindale might be the whisperer that he needs to unlock his potential. And if he does, then there's certainly a lot of potential there.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you look at Livy now, only 6 points behind Hibs. So I think they're 5 points off the top six, which was... I don't think you would have seen... saw coming after the first couple of months of the season. So yeah, it's picked up in Armaville. And we'll let Rob get to his bed. That's us.
No, hang on, Joe. Hang on, how do you say his name?
Caleb Chukwuemeka.
Yeah, that's actually right.
For fuck's sake, Joe, you've ruined the end of the podcast.
There we go.
It's just basically how it's spelt, but you don't really pronounce the E.
I wasn't sure whether to chuck that Ian. Chukwuemeka.
Caleb Chukwuemeka.
Fantastic.
One to watch, I'm sure. But yes, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. You can go across to patreon.com/terracepodcast for all the latest on whatever we're putting up. There's loads of stuff.
The latest one to go up was, the two went up today. There was Ali Heller talking to Graham Thewlis about Tony Watt and Dundee United season in general. And there was Telford and Sean talking about the three most interesting lower league games from the past weekend.
Oh, excellent. So two fascinating lessons, I am sure. And also be sure to check out a review from The Terrace, which is our branch of more cultural stuff like TV and film and maybe some latest books.
And again, an episode went up today because I forgot to do it on Tuesday, and it was episode 3 of the Still Game podcast, looking at the episode called...
Again, another fascinating listening, I'm sure. So, that is us for tonight. Say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.